You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.
Happy birthday, Makers Church. How you feeling? So good. Hey, real quick, if you have been new to this church within the last year, give me a shout real quick. Awesome, awesome. If you've been here longer than a year, give me a shout. Okay, I feel like you all just shouted both times. You're a bunch of liars. Hey, this is so cool. So what that means is there are many, many of you in this room that you've only known us as Makers Church. You've been here in the last year, and you've been able to experience what God has been up to over the last year. And so many others of you have been with us for longer than a year. You've known us both as Mosaic San Diego, and you have transitioned with us into becoming Makers Church. And what we're really celebrating this morning is really a lot of what God has done in the last year as we have launched out from becoming a campus of Mosaic up in Los Angeles and becoming our own church. And it's been really an incredible and crazy experience for us. And we really want to celebrate that this morning together. If you're new with us today, if this is your first time with us, you're joining us at the tail end of a series that we've been in called Reclaimed Rituals. We've been celebrating Lent together as a church, and what we've done is we've picked different spiritual disciplines over the last several weeks that we have unpacked and practiced together, and we've really tried to understand them maybe from a new perspective, or many of us have even heard of these things for the first time. This is the splash zone up here. I'm sick as a dog this morning. I'm going to try not to sneeze on you. So this morning what I want to do is I want to talk about the spiritual discipline of celebration. And, you know, celebration, I think, is a spiritual discipline that we often overlook, especially in the church. Depending on what your faith tradition is, maybe you see faith as really this personal or private thing, something that's somber, or maybe something that's introspective or reflective. And I think a lot of times we can take ourselves just way too seriously. And I love that for thousands of years that the people of God have gotten this discipline right. In fact, my wife Laurel and I and some friends, we went to Israel a couple years ago. And one of the best, coolest celebrations I had ever been a part of in my life was just a simple Sabbath dinner in the home of some Jewish people. And they know how to get down every Friday. It's built into the rhythm of their life, the Jewish people, the children of God. And they got this right. They understand that there are these disciplines that we have in our lives, but celebration is one of them. And without it, all of the other disciplines can just be boring and stale. And so this morning I want to talk about that discipline. There's this story that I love in 2 Samuel 6 that I want to use to help us understand this concept of celebration this morning. A little backstory before we get into it. In 2 Samuel, David has just become king. He has just become king, and he has got a new vision, a new plan. He's going to unite the kingdoms, and he's going to bring everybody together. And he has taken the Ark of God that had been lost. It had been stolen. The Philistines had had it. It was not in the possession of the children of God, and they had just gotten it back. And he wants to take it to the capital city that he has just developed and established. And where the city is it stands in the middle of all of these different kingdoms. And his goal was to bring peace and unity between the kingdoms. And he has this big vision that his people would be a people who have reconnected with this idea of worshiping Yahweh. See, the generation before had lost what it meant to worship, lost what it meant to celebrate. And David has this vision for it, and he's going to bring it back into fruition. And so they're moving the Ark of God to the city, to the place that David had prepared for the ark to sit. And it doesn't go as well as they had planned. David was an activator like me. He didn't really take time to research or understand like the best way to get things done. And so they take it upon themselves to handle the ark however they felt like they should. And somebody just got struck dead like the chapter before. It didn't go well. And so David stops for a minute. He figures out, oh, the Levites, they're the only ones who can handle this thing. So he gets the Levites together, and they're going to move this thing, the Ark of God. They're going to go on this journey. They're going to move it into the city. And 2 Samuel 6:12 says, "Now King David was told, 'The Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and everything he has because of the Ark of God.' So remember, somebody had just died. They moved it. They stopped for a minute. They're like, let's recalibrate. So the ark had been sitting in the house of Obed-Edom, and they're just watching to see what God's going to do. And all of a sudden, God has blessed the house of Obed-Edom. And he's like, all right, it's time to move. So David went to bring up the ark of God from the household of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. When those who were carrying the ark of the Lord had taken six steps, he sacrificed a bull and a fattened calf. Wearing a linen ephod, David was dancing before the Lord with all his might. Now, when I hear that, the dance form that I think of is crumping. Like at this point. Like, if you don't know what crumping is, Google it. But that's what dancing, prove it. That's what dancing with all your might looks like to me. So David's crumping as they're leading this thing towards the place that it's supposed to go. It says, while he and all of Israel were bringing up the ark of the Lord with shouts and with the sound of trumpets. So really, when I think of trumpets, I think of like really great jazz. So he's crumping to jazz music, you know? And I think what we see here is, that I think is fascinating to me, is it says that they began rejoicing. David was dancing with all of his might simply after they had taken six steps. And I'm like, man, isn't that like too early of a celebration? Like, you don't know how this is going to go. Like, you have no guarantee of your success or that this is going to go the way that you have planned it. And I'm like, man, that's a little like early celebration. You might be like not putting yourself in the best situation. But I think what David understands that we need to understand is that celebration should not only happen at the end of the journey when the success has come or the thing is over, but celebration can begin not just with all of this great success, but with opportunity that we have before us. Right? When we are called into something and we see a way forward, even after we've taken six steps, even before God has proven himself faithful, even before we have been successful, even before we have been in that place where we think we should celebrate, even before the celebration should be there, we can celebrate in the early onset of our journey. And I think sometimes that is what's missed the most in our lives. That we wait till it's all said and done, till the success has proven itself. In fact, one of the things I love about Maker's Church is we have a core value. One of our core things says that we are unfinished. And if that's true of us, if it's true that we are a work in progress, that God is in the constant state of transforming us and renewing us, if God is a redeemer and he's renewing and redeeming all things, then we will never get to that place where we can celebrate. It will never be over. We will never be at the place where we have success, right? That we will always be in this constant state of being unfinished. And so we must find ways to celebrate along the way. Many of you have been bored with me telling you about my personal, you know, endeavors of trying to become a captain at work. I work as a firefighter, and I've been in this crazy process trying to get promoted. And I just finished the testing process, and I thought after March 15th, which was my final day, I thought that's the day that like this will be off my mind and it will be all over. I failed to recognize that I have to wait like 3 months for the results. And so it's been like this crazy, crazy couple weeks of just like, my gosh, I have no idea how it went. I have no idea if I failed or if I succeeded. I have no idea. But I knew that on the 15th that I was going to celebrate whatever God had already done up until that point. And for me, that was an amazing wife who had sacrificed so much so that I could focus on that, a church staff that had sacrificed so much so that I could focus on it, and so many people, Nate over there and other people who had poured into me to become a successful candidate in the process. And so even though I have no idea, I may stand up here in a couple weeks and tell you it didn't go well, but I have celebrated along the journey. And I think this is what God is asking of us, that we don't just wait till we get it our way to thank him for it, but we thank him for it along the way. Verse 16 says, as the ark of the Lord was entering the city of David, Michal, daughter of Saul, watched from a window. This is his wife, by the way. This is David's wife. And when she saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she despised him in her heart. That's messed up, man. This is his wife. This is how my wife talks about me when I try to dance. She despises me in her heart. I almost broke her nose one time trying to dance. It was awful. But I think what we can pull from this is, look, not everybody's going to understand your celebration. Not everybody's going to understand what is causing you to rejoice. Rejoice anyways. Even when you have naysayers, even when you have people that don't understand why you should be grateful or thankful, celebrate anyways. Verse 17, it says, they brought the ark of the Lord and they set it in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it. And David sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings before the Lord. And after he had finished sacrificing the burnt offerings and fellowship offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord Almighty. Then he gave a loaf of bread, a cake of dates, and a cake of raisins to each person and the whole crowd of Israelites, both men and women, and all the people went to their homes. This is awesome. They got party gifts. There was party favors at this party. Like, David knew that to celebrate wasn't just to partake, but it was also to give. That celebration is not something that you do on your own, but you bring other people into the process and you journey together through it. In fact, we have a little gift for you guys on the way out today to celebrate 1 year. And Gil talked about it. There's these cool little enamel pins. All the cool kids have them, which is all of you. You're on your way out, you're going to get one from the ushers. But I love that David understood and that we should understand that celebrating is not something that we do on our own, but we don't just partake of it, but we share it with others. It says then in verse 20, when David returned home to bless his household, Michal, daughter of Saul, also his wife, came out to meet him and said, how the king of Israel has distinguished himself today, going around half naked in full view of the slave girls and the servants in this vulgar fellow would. Dude knew how to party. He's running around half naked, like crumping to jazz music, and his wife is looking at him with disdain. And I love his response to her. David said to Michal, it was before the Lord who chose me rather than your father or anyone from his house when he appointed me ruler over the Lord's people Israel. I will celebrate before the Lord. I will become even more undignified than this. And I will be humiliated in my own eyes, but by these slave girls you spoke of, I will be held in honor. And Michal, daughter of Saul, had no children until the day of her death. Now, every time somebody gets struck dead in the Bible, I'm like, I have no idea how to explain that. Like every time that happens, I'm like, God, we gotta talk later. And I don't know exactly what happened here. I don't know if this was a curse because of her discontentment towards her husband. I don't know what it was, but maybe this is simply pointing to the fact that celebration is essential for our health. It says that she had no children after this, that she'd become barren, that she was unable to reproduce, that she had become unhealthy. And I wonder how many times we misunderstand the idea that there are things in our world, there are things going around all of the time that are causing us pain and agony and despair that we actually have control over sometimes, and we don't recognize it. Even this simple idea of celebration, science proves, is good for our health. Science talks about the dopamine and oxytocin, serotonin and endorphins, these things that bring about happiness and joy. In fact, in running, any of you guys runners? You guys are crazy. They talk about endorphins being like the runner's high that like masks the pain of running. I actually don't think I have that in my body. Like, because every step of running hurts. So I'm like, I don't think I have endorphins. I think I'm missing those. But what science proves is that there are certain practices in your life that can bring about these chemical reactions in your body that make you healthy, that make you receptive to the goodness that God could have for us. And I think celebration is one of those things that when you celebrate, when you choose to celebrate, it brings about the joy in your spirit. It's not the other way around. See, you don't have to find yourself joyful to then celebrate. When you celebrate, when you find the good in something, when you find the good of what God has done, then it brings about this joy in your spirit, this happiness that can make you well. And I think that the scriptures point us to this idea that it is our choice as to whether or not we will find the good, whether we will find the good and celebrate it. And I think that we should also understand from this story of David that we shouldn't necessarily count the opinion of others when it comes to the having bearing over how we choose to celebrate. His own wife was naysaying him. His own wife was like, pipe it down. Like, this is ridiculous. I don't understand what you're celebrating. And he says, I will be more undignified than this. Like, you think this is stupid? Watch me try to do ballet or whatever. Like, watch me try to do some different kind of dancing. Watch me try to do some different kind of rejoicing. But I will look foolish for the sake of this kind of celebrating. And I don't want us to think that we should only celebrate when we get it our way, or even when we think that there's hope of it going our way. But the scriptures point to us that we should celebrate even in times of loss, even in times of mourning, even in times of difficulty. Jesus says in Luke 6, verse 20, he says, look at the disciples, he said. Looking at the disciples, he said, blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you will be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you, when they exclude you and insult you and reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day. Celebrate in that day. And leap for joy, because great is your reward in heaven. For that is how their ancestors treated the prophets. So we must rejoice not only when there's cause for rejoicing, but we can choose to rejoice even when things are difficult, even when things are not going our way. But I don't want you to misunderstand me. I'm not saying let's just be on this constant fake hoorah together, right? The scriptures point us to rejoice with those who rejoice, to mourn with those who mourn, that there are seasons to step into different things together. In fact, Ecclesiastes 3:4 says, there's a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. And so I don't think that we must feel like we have to fake it till we make it, right? There are times to grieve, and there are times to sit in the discomfort of life. There are times to mourn and to grieve. But then there comes a time where even when the grieving doesn't wane, even when it doesn't leave us, that we can choose to begin to celebrate the goodness that God has for us in that. So celebration is a choice that we get to partake in. I love that Richard Foster says this in his book, The Celebration of Disciplines. He says, celebration is central to all of the spiritual disciplines. Without a joyful spirit of festivity, all of the other disciplines become dull, death-breathing tools in the hands of modern Pharisees. And I think for us as a church, what we want to do this morning and what we want to do is just reflect and celebrate on all that God has done over this last year. And so we're going to switch gears, and we're going to highlight and talk about all that God has done, and we're going to point out some amazing things and some things that did not go as planned, and we're going to celebrate all of them, because that I think was what God is calling us to this morning. And so we as a church, we have so much to celebrate and to be thankful for. Last year, as we made the shift from Mosaic San Diego to Makers Church, really kind of our theme, the thing that was happening in the midst of us, was this whole concept of reinventing. We were reinventing ourselves as a church. We were looking deep inside and trying to figure out, who are we as a people? Who are we? What is uniquely different about us? And we had to ask a lot of questions, and we had to rework and reinvent everything, from our values to our mission to the very structures and systems that we would have working for us as a church, and how would we achieve the things that we feel like God is calling us to. And so the whole last year, we had kind of shook the Etch-a-Sketch, and we reinvented ourselves. And many of you got to see and hear new language and new disciplines and new practices and new things that we have put into place. And we're going to highlight some of those things here in a moment. We're going to celebrate them. But as we move forward into year two as Makers Church, I felt like the word that God gave me was to reinforce. I feel like God said, hey, over year one, you guys reinvented, but year two, reinforce. Do not sway too far to the left or right from what I know that I've called you to, but stay with it. Stay faithful to the things that you've started and reinforce, build up, and shore up the things that you've begun to practice over the last year. And so, and I think the reason God gave me that word is because we're a bunch of distracted people on our staff. We're like, squirrel, let's try that. Let's go do that. And I'm the leader of the chaos. I love to activate and to change things up just because change is fun for me. And I feel like God spoke clear to me and said, just keep doing what you're doing, but make it better. Yeah. Just keep doing what you're doing, but make it better. And so as we highlight what we reinvented, I want to cast some vision for what we're going to reinforce. And we're going to break this down kind of category by category. And we're also bringing in all of the data that you guys gave us over the surveys we've done in the last few months. And if you participated in those, we are so grateful for your feedback. It has shaped our vision moving forward. It has given us so much positive and constructive feedback on how we can best serve you and the city. And so we're going to highlight a lot of that stuff here now. But before we do that, let's watch a quick highlight video about what God did over the last year. Pretty fun to look back and just see a few of the things and some of the statistics around what the last year looked like for us. But this morning I want to just break down some of the feedback that you guys gave us and talk about that. So here's some quick demographic stuff that came from the surveys. And keep in mind, this is just statistics off of information from the people who actually did the survey. Does that make sense? So this is not like necessarily true of our whole church. This is just from the people who did the survey. It's a big distinction, don't forget that, because I do all the time. I'm like, wow, that's amazing, or that's depressing. And then I'm like, oh, it's just the people who did the survey. So first, we've got a little breakdown about kind of the makeup of who has been here for how long. And so the first slide is about 46% have been with us for more than 1 year, and that's the cheering that y'all just did. That kind of made it interesting to me. So 46% have been with us greater than a year, have been journeying with us for a while, and 33% have been with us for less than 3 months. That's pretty cool. A lot of new folks that have made their way to Makers Church. And so our vision for this, and keep in mind, every time I say about a vision that we have, this is not our strategy. This is not the way that we're going to, I'm not going to articulate clearly how we're going to get there. Some we have a clear plan, others we don't. But we know where we want to go as a church. And so if you hear something, if you hear a vision that pulls on your heartstrings and you've got a solution to that vision, you got a plan, you know how to help us get there as a church, would you please identify yourself, not now, but later, and tell me, hey, I want to help with this, right? Because we're going to cast vision. And if you know how to solve for that problem or help us get there, we want desperately your help. So keep that in mind. So our vision is that we would keep our first-time guests, right? Those 33% in the last 3 months, that we would help keep you by integrating you quickly into the family, by helping assimilate you into the family through Life Track, through community groups, and that you would immediately feel like you belong and that you have a place here as a family. The next thing is a bit of our ethnic breakdown. We have 80% of our congregation, of the people who fill out the survey, is white. 11% Hispanic and 9% other, which is a whole bunch of different ethnicities. Our vision is and always has been to be a multi-ethnic church. We have a long ways to go on this, but we believe that the kingdom of God is of all peoples, of all tongues, of all backgrounds. And we together as a church, we want to create that as a church body. We want this to be a safe place where every person from every walk of life can feel like this is where family is. And so we that's our goal. That's our vision as a church. And like I said, we have a long way to go here, but believe it or not, we have come a long way in this endeavor. The next slide, 62% ladies. Can I hear it from you? 38% men. A couple of you. Word. When I was in college, I went to a small Christian college, and it was like a 1-to-5 ratio, girl to boy. And for a guy, you would think that was awesome. But we used to say, man, the odds are good, but the goods are odd, you know? And I know that's not a very godly thing to say, but that might have been true of the college that I went to, but that is not true of Makers Church. We have some amazing, lovely ladies in this church, and our vision is to find you all a man if you're single. So we need to increase the amount of men that we're reaching. Plain and simple, we believe that the body of Christ, that dudes should be a part of it. And so we've got some work to do there. But we want to reach more men. Some of that was a joke, some of it wasn't. But that plays into the next slide, our relationship status. We've got 32% married, 48% single, and 19% who are in long-term relationships. Our vision as a church is to be a whole family church, meaning that we help families and people become whole, that we want to serve every phase and journey of life. So we want to help those who are single find a lifelong partner and get married. We want to find those who are married, stay married. We want to find those who have been through the tragedy of divorce to get through that. We want to find those who have small children to raise them up into healthy human beings. We want to find those who have become empty nesters to find their next purpose in life. We want to help those who are retired to find a place to give their lives away. We want to help people in all generations. And so our goal around this is that we would help people be healthy in whatever phase of life they're in. That's our vision as a church. The next slide, 14% have children. So just a couple of us have kids, some more than others, Schellenbergs. And 86% don't have children. I'm not gonna wish that on anybody, so my vision is not that that anybody would just go out and have kids. But we want to develop families. We want to develop new parents. And so we've already begun to do this by focusing on parenting workshops and marriage workshops. And we have an amazing kids ministry that is growing and is vibrant. And we want to serve families and kids well. The next slide is our age demographics. 18 to 27 is our biggest age demographic, 54%. And the next is 28 to 32, 17%. And 33 to 39, I am now a minority in this church, which is crazy, 15%. And 40 and over, which I've gotten some pushback on from you old folks, because I know that there's like a lot more than just 40 is not dead. I know that. But it's such a small percentage that we just made the numbers, you know, it's a small percentage, 13%. Here's our vision as a church. We want to not only be a multi-ethnic church, but we want to be a multi-generational church. We want to be a church where we have people who are far ahead of us in our spiritual journeys that we can look up to, that can walk with us and mentor us, and that we all become mentors for other people, that disciple-making is the number one endeavor that we're up to. And we think that this requires, it takes an expanse of generations and experience of walking with Jesus. And so if you have a master plan on how to get old people to come to church, our church, let us know. But we're working on it, and we've already made some great strides in this together as a church. The next slide is not going to be very, very clear, but I'll point out the big pockets. This is where our people live, and the biggest majority of our people live in North Park. Surprisingly, the second biggest number of people live in like Bay Park and Pacific Beach. I don't know if you live there, can you give me a shout? Okay, cool. I had no idea. And then the next biggest number is here in Point Loma. And so our vision around this is that we would reach and serve. People ask me all the time, are we a community church? Or are we like a city church? And I don't know how to answer that question other than we want to serve every single person that walks through our doors well. And so I don't care if you're a commuter and you drive from Pine Valley or if you walk from, you know, two blocks away, we want to serve you well. We want to help you come alive in Christ. And so we want to serve you well. But we do, as a church, have a vision to reach more Point Loma families, because we do believe that where we live and where we do church is an easy place to reach people, specifically Dana Middle School. We are in this school building every week, and we would love to find a way to partner and serve and reach the families of the kids who go to this school and to do that well. Does anybody in the room have kids who go to this school? We got a lot of work to do. But that is our vision around that, to be a place for the families that go to school here, that this would be a home church for them. And so if you know how to help us get there, please tell us, because we're working on it now. All right, the next few slides we're going to break down are our big four things that we've become focused on as a church: encountering God, growing your faith, discovering your purpose, making a better world. This is what we've set goals around and what we're going to celebrate this morning. So when it comes to encountering God, we believe that happens primarily through our Sunday gatherings and through our kids' ministry. And what we did together as a church is last year when we became Makers Church and we looked for a new venue, we set a goal that we wanted to be able to, as a staff and as a church, to serve 500 people. That we wanted to have things in place so that we can serve that. And this room fits 500 people. And our kids' ministry has tons of room to grow and expand in all of the different classrooms around here. And so our goal was to be able to serve and reach 500. What has happened over the last year is our regular attendance on average has been about 300. And that takes some major swings into consideration. So sometimes we have like 500 and other times we have like 100. I don't know what that's all about. But that's what our average is. And so our vision over the next year is that we would just continue to grow into the infrastructure that we already have set up. That we continue to grow into what we've established and created to be able to serve this many people. And so, just real candidly speaking, next week is Easter Sunday. And we will have tons and tons of people who walk through these doors for the first time, just simply because it's Easter. And we would love for every one of you to help us participate in making it an amazing Easter celebration. And so next week, we're doing a 9 o'clock and an 11 o'clock gathering. And what we're inviting all of you to is to serve one, sit one. If you've never served on a team before, we're asking you if you would come and serve next Sunday. And the way you can do that is at the Connect table today on your way out. You can just volunteer yourself. Hey, I want to serve next Sunday. And we'll plug you in next week. We'll connect with you and communicate with you how that is going to look. But if you would be committed to serving through one gathering and sitting through another gathering, that would be a huge way that we can reach a lot of people that are going to come here for the first time and give them the best experience that they can possibly have. Can we do that? Awesome. Awesome. Next highlight is our kids ministry. We serve about 30 to 40 kids each Sunday, and we have 40 kids volunteers who serve regularly, not every Sunday. But that's been a huge growth for us as a church in terms of the way we've been able to grow our kids ministry team, and it's been amazing. Our vision here is that we would expand to serving the next age group that we have yet to serve, which is preteens. So 4th, 5th, and 6th grade is our major focus right now as a church, to figure out how we're going to serve those kids. And that goes hand in hand with this school, since it's a 5th and 6th grade school. So we need to find a way to serve those kids well. And then beyond that, we need to develop a vibrant, life-giving youth ministry for all-aged youth. And we have a heart for that and a vision for that. And if you have a heart for that and vision for that too, please let us know. We would love to work with you on how to create that. The next area is to grow your faith. This happens predominantly through community groups. We've had 175 people attend community groups in the last year. That's amazing. We can clap that up. Our goal was to get 70% of our church to go to community groups, and we got to 60%. To me, that's a win. That's amazing. what is the actual 65%? Whatever it was amazing. What does that say? 65%. So yeah, so that's radical. It's super good. And Pastor Jess over here, who's taking the bull by the horns on community groups, has just done an amazing job getting us there as a church. And so our vision for community groups is not that people would just go, but that they would actually grow deeper in their faith. So as we reinforce that this year, we hope that community groups become the very environment that you are being more connected to Jesus and to each other. And so we have some great plans for that, and it's just going to continue to get better and better. Discover your purpose. This is primarily happening in LifeTrack. How many of you guys have been in LifeTrack? Give me a shout. Awesome. We had a goal of 50% of those who started LifeTrack would complete it. I think that was a pretty accurate goal, and we hit it, right? Yes. 50%. Yeah, Shalise is stoked. So our vision for LifeTrack is that we would help every single person discover their purpose, that they would know the way God designed them and wired them, made them unique, and then find a way to go give their lives away through one of our strategic partnerships or one of our serve teams. And that's our vision for it. It's still the vision for it. We believe that God is going to continue to use it to help people come fully alive and understand that their vocation, that your vocation as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, is to be a minister in whatever environment you will find yourself in, whether that's work or school or at home. We want to help you find the right environment to give your life away. And this, that kind of, from a bigger picture perspective, is our disciple-making strategy is all encompassed in LifeTrack community groups. It's all connected. And the last thing is make a better world. We have amazing serve teams at our church. We have amazing strategic partnerships. And we have an amazing outreach and peacemaking ministry that, well, I'm just break that down, we'll wrap it up. We wanted at least 50% of our attendees serving. And our actual is 40% over last year, which is amazing. Our vision around this is that we would increase the amount of people who continually find their place to give their life away in. And that it would be life-giving. That it wouldn't be out of obligation or out of like peer pressure or us like browbeating you. But this is like a place that you become fully alive as you give your life away. So a couple highlights over our outreach and peacemaking endeavors last year. In 2017, we sent 44 people to Punta Colinet, which is a project in Mexico that we've been partnering with for years, with medical, kids ministry, red light ministry. We've served 500 Syrian men and women and children through interfaith refugee distribution in a big community picnic that we were part of. Refugee tutoring and back to school night, we had 36 volunteers participate in that regularly. September 24th was our International Justice Mission Freedom Sunday, which was amazing. We heard from Ashley Gutierrez, and we all participated in that. Christmas, we had our Bridge of Hope supply drive. Over 600 children received toys because of what you guys brought and participated in. Christmas, we adopted a Miles Apart family, which is Sam and Tina Dula, who are some of our elders here, foundation that they started. We adopted two families in Atlanta and just poured love on them and bless them throughout the Christmas season. And then in January, we sent a team of 10 volunteers to Haiti. And it was such an amazing trip that we sent a full-time missionary there a week ago, Lori Shaw, which is amazing. She moved there. God just grabbed a hold of her heart. Really cool. Really cool all that God did and all that you participated in over the year. For 2018, our goal is to be focused on two impact areas, global and local. And for our global impact area, we've partnered with YouMe, which is an amazing organization founded by Pastor Mark's wife, Lauren, and that we've been partnered with for a long time. And our goal is to have 50 volunteers partner for two different fundraising events and projects, and then to continue our partnership with Punta Colinet, which the big vision there is to continue and finish building the major infrastructure there, which will be a daycare center for families with many other things. And so we want to continue to partner with them on that. For local, we want to stay focused this year on at-risk youth and the refugee community. Our goal is to participate in 9 activities through Monarch School, so that'd be 3 a trimester for us. Continue to partner with them. to establish this care portal that will be five other churches in the area that partner together with us to connect people with families who are fostering children and supporting them in any needs that they may have. And so we're looking for five partner churches. We need five to get this going. And once this care portal gets developed and established, then we together as a church can basically adopt families who have fostered children and support them and love them along the way. We want to donate 200 items to Bridge of Hope and spend 100 hours tutoring through refugee tutoring. So those are our goals for 2018 that I believe that we can mobilize and be a part of. And then the last thing is about money. So we together as a church, we give 10% of our income, of our tithe, we give it away to strategic partners. And last year, here's what we gave. We gave 2% to Young Life, Punta Colonet, North American Mission Board, and UME. And partway through the year, we partnered with an organization called ARC, Association of Related Churches. And there's the dollar breakdown that you can see. This is money that you guys gave to Makers Church that we in turn gave away to other partner organizations that we think are doing amazing work in the world. And so we can clap that up. That's amazing. In 2018, we made a couple tweaks. You can see what the next slide shows, some of the other partners that we're going to partner with and the way that we're going to spend that 10% over the next year. And we'll be excited to report back what God has done with that over the year. The last thing that I want to celebrate and highlight is last year as we reworked what it looks like to talk about giving and our finances and our money, and as we focus, our vision has always been to help people become financially free. And so we took on this new thing called Next Step Giving, which is basically a concept where we inspire and ask every person to just take the next step in giving. So if you've never given, give something. If you've given something one time here or there, start giving regularly. If you've done that, then start giving recurring and go to 10% and go beyond 10%. The whole goal is to take the next step. And as we kind of pitched this vision last year, some really cool things that happened. If you compare 2016 to 2017, we went from 176 givers total for the year to 261 givers. That's amazing. That's amazing. If you look at the dollar amount, though, it stayed pretty much the same. Which there's one thing to celebrate, and there's another thing to have vision for. And our vision for this is that as more people become generous, that the dollar amount that we have to do ministry would actually go up. And so I don't know what's all packed in that little graph. But I want to celebrate and highlight that there are more and more of you who have found a way to be generous in your life. And that's an amazing thing that we want to celebrate. And so we're going to just end on that note. I know it's been a lot of information thrown at you, but we wanted to take the time this morning to just celebrate and highlight and show the work that God has done in you and through you as a church, and to give some vision for what we see God doing over the next year. If one of those things stood out to you, please come and find me or any pastor and let us know that you want to be a part of creating a solution for those things. And we would love to step into that with you this year.
You are listening to the Makers Church Podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.